Hello, welcome to Reality TV. First things first, thank you to my newest Patreon subscribers, Rebecca, Jana, and Lindsay. Welcome to the Baddest Apples. And if you are interested in signing up for Patreon, I really hate to plug and push this, but I'm going to be very honest with you. It's what keeps this podcast alive. So if you're interested in Patreon, head to patreon.com/realityvpod. Link is in the show notes. And on this week's bonus episode, oh, I cannot wait to record with Amanda from Amanda Loves to Hate Teen Mom. We're going to be recapping this week's Love After Lockup, the Netflix show Cheer, which I absolutely loved. I think Amanda is on the other end of the spectrum, but we'll just wait and see. And we are going to be talking about the first three episodes of the HBO documentary series, McMillions. I think I have some inappropriate crushes on some of the FBI agents, or maybe they're very appropriate. Maybe I need to change professions here because, oh, what I would do to be an undercover agent, I probably blow it. But listen, it's all about me, okay? It would be the experience that I would be getting. You guys have got to watch that show if you have not watched it already. It is really good. And it's not all about McDonald's, at least from what I've seen. It's more of a true crime story. So get in there. Okay, now in this week's regular episode, coming up very shortly, 90 Day Fiancé, Married at First Sight, Sister Wives, and 60 Days In. Now, I have actually not had a whole lot of free time this week. I'm going to pull the curtain back a little bit. My dad has lung cancer. He had a really big setback the last week or two. Last week, I was in the hospital a lot. This week, he's in one of those rehab facilities, and all of my family members, my siblings, my mom and I, we're taking shifts so that we can be there with him. And all of you who are nurses, techs, OTs, PTs, caregivers, doctors, everything, you deserve all the money in the world, all the love in the world. What you do is absolutely incredible. And I could probably cry right now. I just want to say thank you because you do not get thank yous enough. And if you are in a situation like I'm in now where you're caring for a parent or a sibling or maybe a grandparent, I'm there with you in spirit. We're all here for each other and we can get through this together, right? It's moments like this that you really realize how small the world is and how kind people are. In saying that, I'm going to apologize that there are so many of you that I need to get back to in DMs and emails. Please know I need to get back to you. I'm just trying to balance it all. So there you go. That's my serious moment for the week, but I really do want to get snarky because that's all of our mental escape, right? You can tell that I am really going off the deep end here, and so are our couples on 90 Day Fiancé. Let's jump right into it. Two nights we're bringing this tell-all down to. I believe this is shortened from previous seasons because I swear I remember some three-parters. And this two-parter was actually only 3 hours. I thought it was going to be a two-night, two-hour thing, but they surprised us on Monday night. We had only 1 hour of a tell-all, and then the second hour they tricked us and it was actually pillow talk. But we open the tell-all with Annie's red Payless pumps. They are making their appearance because it's Showtime synergy. I think those things need a whole spinoff on their own. Next, we meet up with Sasha and Emily, whose voice octave gets higher and a little pitchier every week. I think I need to talk to Amanda and ask her what is going on with Emily because she's got some sort of voice modulation disorder. But she's been working hard. I have to give her credit. She's been taking the Russian to the mall and to the gym. She's trying to acclimate her primate to American culture. But too bad it's not working because it's not 1988 anymore. Emily, wake up. You don't bring someone to a mall and Gold's Gym to learn what America is like. He's way more likely to become Americanized if she dropped him off at any local Starbucks, give him an iPhone, show him how to use Instagram. He can take some cute pictures with filters with his unicorn frappuccino. But then, of course, you have to balance it out the way healthy Americans do and swing by a Jimmy John's or an Arby's or what I affectionately call Arboobs. You know, hashtag self-care, hashtag balance. Next, we see Marcel and Anna. I kind of want to call Marcel Marcel the elf from now on. I'm kind of disappointed that I didn't think of this earlier. He's always clinging onto Anna's shoulders, and he definitely has that elfish quality to him. Hopefully, you guys are getting this very deep throwback. This is a deep cut back to early 80s, there was a picture book and an audiobook series, and it was called Herself the Elf. And I was obsessed, head over elf, if you will. Herself was my Beyonce. So I guess it's with both regret and honor that I call Herself the Elf, but I don't know. It just fits. It does. God, I hope one of you guys knows what I'm talking about, because Herself was amazing. I still have the picture book. If you remember her, please reach out, because I feel like we'd be long lost best friends. Oh, that and the Elf picture book series, we'd also be friends. I actually found one of the books that I think I actually myself donated. It was at my local thrift shop when it was closing, and I rebought it back. It's the Elf Goes Camping book. And speaking of a loud, unwanted house guest, what perfect time for Angela to show up. I thought it was hilarious that they have all the other couples arriving via Uber or a nice SUV. And here we have Big Ange strolling down a turnpike in a stained coat with a cigarette inserted just directly into her trachea. Then she takes it, flicks it into the streets of New York City because, you know, her taxes pay for those streets. Haters. God, she's such an asshole. And then we have DaBella DaBall, Tanya and her broken foot. That's called karma, bitch. Just keep rolling, rolling, rolling down the fucking street with your stupid ass scooter, you narcissistic bitch. Oh, well, there I got my rage out for the week. Let's go to the beginning of the actual episode. So we have Sean Robinson, who's hosting, who is much too mild. I actually think Angela was gunning for her position, but more on that later. We get a little mashup of the couple's first moments together when they met at the airports, blah, blah, blah. Now, the biggest shocker here was that Anna and her kids have a very open relationship about sex. Her kids heard her having sex with Sinjin. Who? Now that's going to really fuck me up for the rest of the day. They heard her having sex with Marcel, and they were all talking about it, joking around. Ew. Maybe that says more about me than them, but I don't want to think about Anna and Marcel or Sinjin. Not now, not then, not now, not ever. No. But that was not the last of the disgusting sex talk. Angela is not only, well, Angela. Angela is a grandmother who counts how many times a day she has sex. She remembers, not that her daughter is a pedophile, but she does remember that in 14 days while she was in Nigeria, she counted she had sex with Michael 38 times, up to 4 times a day. That is quite a bit of cardio. I would expect some six packs, some strong core muscles, but I mean, who knows? Maybe they went a little overboard on the post-workout shakes or makeup cakes. And then we have Merself the Elf sitting over there just giggling like me with his prayer beads, which is probably something I would do myself. Actually thought that was kind of cute to see him do that. But, you know, he's not used to people being so open about chuka chuka and sex and all that kind of stuff. I get it. Now let's start going couple to couple, and of course, we have to talk about Tanya and Sinjin first. After a trip down traumatic memory lane, Sean Robinson gets in there to try to figure out why Tanya thought it was okay to go leave for 30 days during the 90 and study during the week and party only on the weekend, Sean. Jesus! Now Tanya is very quick with an answer that Sinjin is a grown man, you know, and he can take care of himself. She did the same thing when she was in South Africa, so I don't understand what the big deal is. Okay, is it ironic that Scout is now barking when I'm talking about Tanya? I think not. Now, here's the difference, Tanya. Sinjin was living in South Africa, and she was there by choice, right? She was also studying or partying or doing whatever. Sinjin was in the she shed specifically for Tanya and their marriage. He wasn't here to be a grown man on his own. That's the difference. Now then they start talking about this whole working situation, and Sinjin only wants to work if he loves his job because he's got some PTSD from working in the mine. So clearly there's an issue. But the difference, once again is that Tanya knew this about Sinjin when she met him. Now, I'm not saying he shouldn't work because he's got whatever issues. Like, he needs to work that shit out. And I do think he's being a little idealistic and a lot lazy, but she knew this about him. That has been a consistent personality trait with Sinjin. She knew he was a free spirit when she met him, but now she wants to change him to meet her lifestyle. For example, babies. She wants babies now. He doesn't even know if they're that great. She knows this about him. I don't think she's allowed to be all pissy about it if he doesn't change from the person that he always has been to a person that she wants him to be. Moving along to Emily and Sasha. Much like Tanya's foot, Sasha is getting his karma. It's time to pay the price for being an asshole and being very ignorant the entire season because we have a special guest, you say? Betsy, are you there? Oh, Betsy's here and she is clear as hell that Sasha is still an asshole. He's a dumbass and turns out he has no nutrition accreditation. Wow, that's unexpected. I mean, you gotta love the fact that Sasha brushed off Emily saying that she felt lightheaded because she didn't eat anything. Yeah, a nutrition and fitness expert, they really think that lightheadedness and starvation are just amazing for building that ripped muscle, reaching your goals. This guy's an idiot. I mean, basically, it was no surprises. Sasha is still Sasha. Betsy is still awesome. And Emily is in way over her head. Michael and Juliana. I feel like I have to kind of put the snark on hold because Juliana needs a big hug. Her family has put her in a really bad spot, and maybe they got a little resentful or a lot resentful, very jealous, we'll just say that, and it sucks for her. Now let's get to the good stuff. Sarah is there, which I liked because I enjoy Sarah, but also I think she was a good support for Juliana. I didn't think it was a big surprise that Michael cheated or emotionally cheated or felt tied down. He felt trapped in his marriage. You could just tell that. He portrays himself exactly for who he is. He's trying to relive his youth. You know, he thinks he's lost because he hasn't been able to find what he's looking for his whole life. But what he doesn't realize, he's just tying himself down again, this time with a younger woman. But here's the thing. I feel like I can't really hate Michael at all because of those kids. I mean, of course, I credit Sarah for most of this because duh. But when Max came out and went down the line and shook everyone's hands, and then Cece blew a kiss back to Natalie, I absolutely melted. This is how all blended families, or whatever you want to call them, blended, fractured, mixed, whatever, it's how they should be. You know, no matter Sarah's feelings about Michael and their marriage and vice versa, they both love their kids. They wanted to make sure that their kids were okay, or actually more than okay. They wanted them to feel loved. That's every parent's goal, is to make sure that their kids feel loved. And I think those kids do feel that way because there's a bright light about them. We don't feel that way about every other kid on this show because they kind of get lost in the background. Maybe their parents are a tad narcissistic. I know it's cheesy. I'm just being a softy, and I love those kids. Now, there was a whole hot take right after this where Sasha thought he was sounding really profound. He said he wishes Emily would get along with his annoying ex-wives already. Ugh. And Emily overhears this and tries to clarify that it's about Sasha's exes that are against having a relationship with her. Well, Sasha hears this and barks back, "Do you hear what I say? Wife." Okay, he didn't say the wife part, but he was such an asshole and condescending to her in front of everyone. Fuck you, Sasha. I don't know if Sasha's got this strategy that he wants to lose a wife in 10 months or less just by wearing her down, but I don't think he's going to do that with Emily. I think he's actually going to end up empowering her to just leave his ass in the dust. He's truly one of the worst husbands that I've ever been on this show. Definitely in the Moldova Andre territory. Okay, Robert and Annie. I can't believe I'm actually warming up to Annie, but she has a heart in there that I didn't think she had. And hearing that she had the opportunity before to marry a rich guy back in Brazil and that she hated it, It made me trust her a tad more. Like, I can see Robert and Annie as the type who like to pick fights with each other, or they like to have these ongoing tiffs because they know that they're not really serious about it. They just like the attention that they get from each other, and then they have that crazy, passionate makeup sex after. In that way, I think they're compatible. And I enjoyed Annie chiming in on how she respects Sarah and Juliana's relationship. But hold up, I'm not going to get all sappy again. Bryson's thirsty as fuck grandparents are here. Nana, Stephanie, and Papa Ben, are you there? Stephanie is decked out like she's in a 1998 Mrs. America pageant, and when freaking Ben with his MAGA rally beard. But politics and porn aside, these two are freaking unhinged. They definitely fit in the Florida culture. Sorry, Florida. I don't totally understand this apartment fire situation that Robert was talking about. I think he was saying that he was kind of throwing it out there for Stephanie to take Bryson in for a couple weeks so he could stay in Florida, probably go to a same school, and she refused. Not totally sure about that, but it doesn't matter. From the jump, porn star Granny was out of line asking Annie those questions about her fertility and what she's on for birth control. They're just looking for their 15 minutes of fame, and I think it's over. So is her segment, Anna and Marcel. Maybe I was in a salty mood because of Robert's asshole in-laws. I was over this Anna and Marcel segment even before it started. We know your kids were upset. We know his parents didn't want him to marry you. Nothing new. I do want to talk about their potential to have a baby via a surrogate because, of course, this is something that's close to my heart. I was a two-time surrogate, and I'm just going to go on my opinion and facts that I know. I don't think many surrogates would be interested in keeping their surrogacy quiet or a secret because it kind of defeats the whole gift of life. You know, celebrating that as people together want to put our hearts and our souls into creating a life and a family for you together. Personally, I do know someone who experienced being a on the down low surrogate for a couple because of religious and cultural reasons, pretty similar to this situation. And it was not good. It makes things very complicated, and it left this particular sorro with real raw wounds that need to be healed. All that to say, I just think Anna and Marcel are extremely naive. Again, nothing new, but when you start dragging your own children into it, and then you're going to be dragging another woman, probably her partner and her kids into it too, yeesh, I think they're opening up a can of worms that they will not know how to control. This somehow transitions back to Tanya and Sijin and them being soulmates. We get it. Tanya sucks. She can't explain herself out of a paper bag in front of anyone. So we go to Natalie and Mike asking them if they are soulmates. I'm more concerned about Natalie's degree of lockjaw at this point because it is really tightened up since last we spoke. You know, everyone is looking at her crazy eyes, but I am looking at those Bethany Frankel jowls that are forming because it is locked up very tightly. There's just a lot of beating around the bush, and we'll get to Mike and Natalie later. Oh, no pun intended, beating around her bush, whatever. We're going to go into part two now, which was the second night, only an hour. I don't know about you, but I was very disappointed by the second hour. I thought we were going to have a lot more action, but I guess that's why the TLC teaser trailer people make some good dough. So let's check in with Angela and Michael. Michael is Skyping in, and we get this very tame, watered-down love story of these two. This is where I take my deep breath before I go off. What fucking planet are we on? Angela is a downright monster. Yeah, that's right. I said downright monster. She is borderline evil. Let's remember she raised a pedophile and now we don't hear anything about it. She swung at Avery's mom during the last tell-all, was yelling at Avery, telling her that she's an idiot. She's an obnoxious bully. Are we really to believe she's a victim of Michael's friends because they called her a pumpkin and they called her trashy? She could be called a lot worse than trashy and pumpkin. And to top off her temper tantrum, she calls in a classic Bill Cosby line, I brought you into this world, and I can take you out. Not a good choice of words there, Angela. Too soon. Now, Jasmine and Blake. Yikes. Blake is obviously not a fan of the natural look because he is sporting some true blue steel contacts. These two chatterboxes, wow, let me tell you, no one could get a word in edgewise. I mean, just yip, yip, yap. Could not stop talking, so we had to cut those two off and get to Everett and Rita, who were Skyping in. I thought I liked Everett, but he must be a real voice of reason and successful businessman because he's managed to roll himself out of bed in a dirty hoodie with the hood up, poured himself a glass of water and a can of a sparkling carbonated fruit juice to sip and slurp on throughout their entire segment. We know you're thirsty, but are you really that thirsty? You couldn't manage to hold off from snacking while you're being interviewed for a national TV show? Dear God. I mean, when I was on that 90 Day Fiancé tell-all special for all of 3 minutes, like a year, 2 years ago, whatever, they have you positioned and mic'd up. They don't even want you to breathe in the wrong direction. No fucking way was the person who was in charge of that segment pleased with Everett at all. Rita looked amazing. I just need to say that. But what the fuck? It doesn't matter because they're all boring. There's nothing that was said during this tell-all that we didn't already know. Ugh, if they are on another season, they're going to become the next Paula and Russ, the couple that no one wants to hear from anymore. They have nothing to offer, but for some reason, they're like the Dingleberry of the cast. They just keep hanging around for some reason. I mean, Blake is weird, super weird with those contacts in. And Jasmine, oh, she's just one of the most beige human beings on the planet. Now, finally, we get to Mike and Natalie. They have been teasing us with this for weeks now. Natalie has been saying she doesn't know if she loves Mike, and everyone's feeling bad for Mike because Natalie's being very evasive. But then it gets turned around and Mike is being evasive because she says that he has betrayed her. There's things that he's not saying. So everyone starts asking him, and finally he says that he was the best man in his female friend's wedding. He spent the night at her house the night before her wedding. Her husband was supposed to be there, but he wasn't. Natalie thinks they may have cheated, or even if they didn't cheat, why would he be lying about the husband not being there? Maybe I'm super naive, but I kind of believe him that nothing happened. All I got was a lot of back and forth, and Natalie would like never ever go to visit a NASA space center. And then of course we have Angela trying to be a relationship counselor. I couldn't believe how self-righteous Angela was to interrupt every single couple and tell them what they should and shouldn't do based on her and Michael's relationship. You're in different countries right now. He's denied. You're refusing to go and move there. So what the fuck are you talking about? And Angela would be the last person I would take any type of advice from. I'm not taking financial advice. I'm not taking relationship, parenting, grandparenting. Wow, Angela, you are truly blind. Oh, and speaking of Love is Blind, this is a real tangent here. Have you guys started watching Love is Blind on Netflix? I watched the first episode because Kim from People Are Wild podcast, amazing. She's an ER nurse. She's got some great topics, great stories. People are wild. Anyhow, Kim was telling me on Twitter that I have to watch it. I watched the first episode and I wanted to steal a shiv from one of the 60 Days In people and throw them at some of these girls because they are so fucking annoying. I don't know if I can keep watching it though. It kind of seems like Married at First Sight meets, yeah, like 90 Day Fiancé. It's very bizarre. Let me know if you're watching it. And if you are, I know Kim's going to be recapping it. So tune into that. And also make sure you tune into my very next segment after I take a quick break. Let's talk about, oh, some Sister Wives and 60 Days In. All right, ladies, how many times have you loaded up your online shopping cart and then ditched it because the total requires you to sell a kidney to afford it? Look no further than ModCloth. Their vintagey vibe and timeless basics are quite literally for every woman and every budget. You know how I am with finding good deals on quality items, and I'm gonna get personal because we're all friends here. It is frustrating as hell trying to find stylish clothes in your size when you're anything larger than a size 14, which is why I wanted to crack cry tears of joy when I saw a Mod Cloth carry sizes extra, extra small to size 26. They have some super cute skirts I was eyeing, but I don't really dress up that much. I'm more of a jeans and t-shirt gal, so I treated myself to this distressed graphic tee that has female written on it in this cool font, and I also got the Keep It Positive graphic tee because I'm keeping it positive this year. It's my own. I already have some sweaters I know I'm going to throw over it with some jeans. I mean, boom, done. It can't be any more easy. Now, truth be told, I am not a bag purse person, but I was very tempted. There are some leather backpack kind of things, you know, the super trendy ones. They're on sale, by the way, so go and take a look. And there are also these bags that have zebra print over a navy background, or there's ones with bees on it, which is very Anna and Marcel, but it's updated with leather accents, keeps it very now and trendy. It would actually make a really cute computer bag for work if you work outside the house. And oh, I got one more thing. My first jumpsuit, I was nervous about it, but I read the reviews and a few ladies mentioned that the smocking up top is good for us ladies who are blessed up there. And it was only $24. I mean, how can you go wrong? My entire total with both shirts, the romper, and shipping was right at $50. That is pretty damn amazing. To get 15% off your purchase of $100 or more, including sale items, go to ModCloth, that's ModCloth.com, and enter code REALITY, that's reality with a Y, not reality TV, at checkout. Promo codes cannot be combined with other offers, and again, that's ModCloth.com, and enter code REALITY for 15% off your order of $100 or more. Check it out, link is in the show notes. If you are not watching 60 Days In, I'm not going to remind you anymore because you're just screwing yourself over because this show is my favorite show on right now. So first of all, Dennis continues to be a real cocky prick. Would I ever say that to his face? Of course not, because he would punch my fucking face in. He thinks he's pod boss, though, which is rubbing Tony the wrong way. And Tony thinks it's fucking hilarious because Dennis couldn't be more wrong. Alex has an issue with Dennis as well because Alex is waiting in line along with, 50, 60 other inmates to get their lunch trays. And all these assholes come and they start cutting in line. And who's one of them? Fucking Dennis, like right in front of Alex. And they know each other's in the program. So it's almost like Dennis is purposely doing this just to needle Alex. And it fucking sucks. Now, Dennis says he's doing it because that's how he's going to kind of move up in the ranks and show his status. And now Dennis finds that Tony has a plan and he wants in on it too because Dennis is competitive. Tony's goal is to obtain a shank while he's in prison. So now Dennis thinks that he wants to find a shank too, and he thinks he can find it quicker. Now let's talk about Tony. Right, Scout? You're going to be my 60 Days In therapy dog. Sorry, I guess she gets so scared when I talk about the clink. Tony wants to get a banger, which is what they call a shiv. You know, we all know the lingo at this point. And Dennis wants to beat him. But first, Tony needs to stretch out and rip the hugest ass ever in the morning and announce it with a top of the morning to ya. I had a physical reaction, to which I immediately turned to Dave looking for some sort of validation or understanding, and he still eyes right on the screen, no reaction whatsoever. So I'm thinking, maybe I didn't see or hear this correctly, or maybe he didn't. So I went to go back, to which of course then he wakes up, he's like, whoa, what are you doing? It's like, hold on, did you see that? No reaction, nothing. Is this really how guys interact? They just rip ass in front of each other and no reaction whatsoever? Dave didn't even giggle. It was as if someone said, hello, how are you? Good morning. What's going on in our world? We must make our men evolve. Whatever. I just needed to acknowledge that and get that off my chest and flesh it out with you guys. Now, after he rips ass, we talk about this shank because he hears one being made. You can hear some banging on metal around, and that's the sign that someone's sharpening it. Tony met this guy named O'Shea during intake. He was the guy that was screaming at the drunk guy, and I think he might have taken his $20, whatever. He knows that O'Shea's the guy to go to if he has a shank. So he tells O'Shea that he will trade him 10 soups for a shank. Then O'Shea rolls down the little peg roll on his jeans, and he's got a shank in there. So they trade the soup for the shank. And then later, when lights are out, I don't know why I'm whispering, but I feel like, I don't know, Williams is going to come over and jump me here. He shows the camera guys, hey, camera guys, I got the shiv. And this thing looks like a long thing of what you unlock a door handle with around your house. It's just like this long, skinny thing. Obviously, you could stab someone to death with it. But Tony thinks it's fucking hilarious. Now, let's keep in mind, he's got that thing hidden in his room now. Then we go over to him talking on the phone, and he is like really good with this inmate stuff. And he pulls up his t-shirt and he holds it over the mouth part of his phone. That's some smart shit. I think Ashley should probably start doing that because she's talking way too much to the camera. But here's what's going down while Tony's talking on the phone. This guy Versace and Willie start to pop off, if you will. And the COs are standing around doing nothing. They're like between the guys, like, oh, you guys gonna fight? Okay, sounds cool. Oh, right. Are you gonna like fight over there, over here? Should I step back so I don't get in the middle of it? What the fuck is your job? You're supposed to be stopping this shit or at least alerting some other people who can come back you up. But no, he does nothing. So Willie and Versace are just going back and forth. One of them runs into the shower, grabs a broom, like what LARPers use, I guess. He starts swinging it at the guy to hit him and stab him. And then you see a fire. No, not flames. A fire is also a shiv or a banger. He pulls out a fire and starts fucking stabbing the guy. And of course, then they cut out and we'll see what happens next week. But it's not going to be good because you can see the thing piercing the guy's skin. It was pretty terrible. Now let's talk about Alex. Oh, poor Alex. He's standing in line. All the cutters are cutting in line. And he actually made a very good generalization about the cutters. They're cutting in line because they are those kids who grew up that way where no one told them you can't do that or don't do that. They never had consequences. And now they're the adults that are cutting in line in fucking prison or in jail, whatever, same difference. Now, Dennis, like I talked about, cut in line, and Alex says to the camera crew, well, once an asshole, always an asshole, and I agree with him. I don't think Dennis could do anything at this point that would redeem himself to us viewers. Now, Alex at this point has tried a lot of shit. He's tried cutting his hair to fit in. He's tried smoking a clone. That was a thing that I forgot was called last week. I think I was calling it a crotch. It's called a clone. He's trying to go to people and shake hands with them. He starts eating crackers, but then they call him a cracker. They say that he's a police officer, which I don't think he seems like a popo at all, but that's just me. He also lends this guy his radio. He should have learned his lesson when he let people smoke off of his e-cigarette last week, but he didn't. He caved. He let the guy have his radio, and then he's afraid that he's going to have to fight the guy to get it back. So in the middle of the night, after he's tossing and turning all over this disgusting floor with three pairs of flip-flops around his head, he gives the signal and he taps out. He actually says goodbye to Dennis, which is very interesting. I feel like some of the other inmates should have seen that interaction because they never interacted before that. And all of a sudden they're high-fiving and hugging. But once he's out, he says he feels really shitty. He thinks that he could have done more in there or that he should have done more. He knows he's going to regret it, but the mental part just got to him because he was bullied as a kid. And then he calls home and he talks to his mom, and he says he knows his parents are going to be disappointed. I don't know how you guys feel, but if I were his parents, I don't know if I could be disappointed in my son if he felt like he couldn't make it in jail. I would almost feel like, oh, thank God I didn't raise you to be the type who could survive in jail. You know what I mean? I don't think I could say, oh, I'm disappointed that you quit. You know, maybe he has a past of quitting school and jobs and all that kind of stuff, so he's grouping this in with that. But if I were his parents, I'd just say, come on, baby boy, come here. Come here. I'm not going to stab you with a banger. I'm going to let you cut in line all you want, my little handsome devil. Oh, God, I just really grossed myself out. I'm not going to lie. All right, let's go over to the ladies' pod. We didn't get a whole lot happening with them this week. It was more the guys. But Jennifer is still bonding with Ashley. They're kind of becoming besties. And Shanice cannot stop complaining. She's really getting fucking annoying. Jennifer seems very likable, although she is very religious. This isn't something I'm super familiar with, so maybe it's just how I'm interpreting it. She thinks she can fix mental illness with religion, which is what puts Shanice, I don't know. Shanice is now not a fan of Jennifer because Jennifer is praising Jesus and saying that she can fix this girl by just praying to God. Ashley probably has similar opinions of Jennifer, but she nominates Jennifer to be a trustee with her because all the other trustees end up being sick, maybe from unclogging all of the shit last week. Who knows? But they're both annoyed with Shanice because Shanice keeps complaining about her feet, then her legs, then her germs. The food doesn't fit her gluten-free diet, which we get, it's an actual thing. But in addition to the celiac disease, she's just a big whiner and complainer about everything else. Now, then we get to this scene with Shanice getting annoyed with, surprise, surprise, she's getting annoyed with someone else. She's annoyed with her roommates because her roommates are always smoking clones or doing drugs. She wants no part of it. And she also doesn't want to get caught with having stuff in her room and then be in real trouble. But there's this woman named Angel in the pod, and Angel is hooking everyone up with drugs, and she's also doing them herself, which means she needs clean pee. So knock, 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 Shanice, Angel needs your pee. Shanice tries to brush it off and say, oh, I can't because I smoked weed before I came in and it was a couple weeks ago, but her roommate's not falling for that kind of shit. So what does Shanice do? She caves and she pees for Angel. Cut to the next day, and Angel is running through the pod cheering and saying goodbye because she is getting out because she had a clean pee. When Ashley learns from Shanice that Shanice peed for her, Ashley's pissed. She is an officer of the law. They don't know this, and this really pisses her off. This is going to get really tricky because next week, Ashley keeps fucking up and she does some sort of police officer move to help restrain some girl that's about to dive through the railing and kill herself. Guess Jennifer's prayers didn't work to Jesus. He didn't heal her yet. Yet. Okay, we'll still hold out hope. Make sure you guys are watching 60 Days In. We really need to get more people on board. I know you are all going to be shocked, but I have something called anxiety. It's nothing to be ashamed of, and sometimes I need help. And last year, many of you told me to look into CBD. CBD was a whole new world to me, so I started Googling. I ended up buying some gummies and oils, which claimed to have CBD, but who the hell knows? All I wanted was to find a quality product from an honest company with 100% transparency. Well, the gods and feels heard my calls for help and made the whole process easy from start to finish. So here's the deal. I personally spoke with Feels because I wanted to know facts. I didn't want to waste my money on crummy gummies again. Feels told me the reason they stick to tinctures. It's because the absorption rate is 35 to 50% compared to those gummies and lotions at only 3 to 5%. If you're new to CBD like I am, you can talk to Feels too. They have a free CBD hotline and tech support to help you find the best product for you. Now let's talk about the good stuff. Feels wants you to get the most from your CBD, so their tinctures pack a punch. If you know the strength of CBD that's right for you, you can order straight away, or you can try their flight of three strengths for only $20. After talking with Feels about how I needed to curb my anxiety and needing to stay awake and focused, they recommended I start with their mildest strength and their flight. I tried that little buddy out, but I thought I needed to go a little stronger. So I tried the 1200, which was included in my flight, and yes, I hit the sweet spot. I was able to record this week's episode with a clear head, and clearly I don't sound tired or groggy here, do I? So here's the deal. Feels wants you to find the right CBD for you. Whether that's reducing anxiety, pain, or sleeplessness, Feels CBD works naturally to help you feel better without getting a high or hungover. That's why I loved trying the flight. But if you already know CBD is right for you, Feels hassle-free membership program is guaranteed to help you feel your best month after month, or your money back. It's just that simple. You can start today with 50% off your order and free shipping. Plus, members always get 30% off Feels products, which are grown and sourced here in the U.S. by our very own farmers. Feels has me feeling my best every day, and it can help you too. Become a member today by going to feels.com/realityTV, and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. feals.com/realityTV to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. That's Feels, feals.com/realityTV. All right, let's talk about sister wives. Cody's got to get some people on board too, right? Why Not One House is the name of this episode. And it took a full 17 and a half minutes before I took a single note in this episode because It was a snooze fest. This is a classic Sister Wives filler episode, which sucks because I do love this show, and I'll continue watching it until it's canceled. It's slow and it's redundant, but I do love it. So the episode begins in Mary's kitchen, sans wet bar, but there is a bar height kitchen table. So it's like a 5-bedroom, 3.5-bath, half wet bar setup. The wives are gathering to make vision boards, which is fucking hilarious because there was a follow-up tweet by Janelle that said she still has an unfinished vision board. It's still in a garbage bag in her car. Maybe she should finish it or drop it back off at Mary's. It was pretty fucking funny. Obviously, this is a means to an end to get all the wives together to talk about their decision if they want to build Cody's Barbie dream house or if they're going to live separately. Christine is still not budging from her stance of, I want to live by myself and never, ever anywhere near the rest of you bitches. Janelle is all for the fiscally more responsible decision to live in one house. Mary pouts and doesn't say much, pretending she's very serious about her visioning on her board. And Robin, well, she just asks a lot of questions while knowing all along, she's going to get the biggest house with the longest longevity because she has the youngest kids with Cody. She's got the freshest uterus, so therefore, she's wife number one no matter what. Now, we'll get back to the big house debate later because it's moving day again. Only 8 months into her lease, Janelle is packing up to move closer to Christine and Robin. I swear to God, they just love shitting money. That's why Mary's not moving closer too, right? She's just budget conscious. God. Now, this new rental that Janelle gets is a ranch. And I was going into it very open-minded because I've actually grown to appreciate ranches. But this ranch was very Janelle. You know, no nonsense, bare bones, a little dated. Carpet hasn't been updated or cleaned in probably a good 7 to 10, if you know what I mean. You get the picture. And Cody, seeing that he's going to have to sleep at this place at least one night a week, Cody calls for an emergency immediate meeting. He loses steam almost instantly because he rephrases Christine's loss of her mom identity to no mojo. I think we just need to cut the shit, call it like it is. Now, my buddy Carrie from Sip and Shine Podcast, she read their book that they all co-authored together, and I thought I knew everything about these people and this show because I've watched it from the beginning, but what they say in that book is pretty damn explosive, and it's very applicable to what's going on this season. I think this loss of mom mojo or loss of mom identity is really directed directly at Mary. In that book, Christine says she and Mary did not get along for a long time because Mary would pick specifically on Christine's kids. She would call them out on more stuff. She would be more harsh with the discipline, and her kids did not like to be with Mary. And I think we've learned the same thing about Janelle's kids. So I think that's really what that is about. Janelle is the most gung-ho about this one house because she feels like that has always been Cody's vision, to have one family, not four separate families, four separate homes. I think it's very interesting that Janelle and Mary, of all people, are the most in favor of one home. And then we have Robin, who starts crying about whether or not her perception of life in Cody's sack was accurate. I thought we were always one family. Don't tell me it wasn't special. Stop it, sobbing Robin. Cody needs a fresh sprunch spray, and Mary's face is about to crack. We don't have time for your bullshit. And that's really what it's coming down to for Robin and me. Yes, our personal relationship. I didn't always love her. I thought she was okay. But now I'm calling bullshit on everyone except Janelle, really. I think Janelle does want to have one big polygamist family. Look, Robin has always been in a single relationship, right? I mean, I know she was raised in a polygamous family, but she had a monogamous relationship before. Christine says she wanted it. But look, if they all want to have three separate families with a husband coming and going, and they don't even want to see the other wives with their husband, is that really them wanting a polygamous family or a big family? You know what I mean? If it's about the family should be in one house. Now I'm getting caught up in it. Okay, I'm going to take a very quick break, and then I'm going to be back with Married at First Sight. About a month ago, I got very personal and told you about planning my pregnancies years ago. Modern fertility would have been a huge help and a money saver back then. Well, as I told you, I went to my OBGYN appointment in late January and I pulled up my results from Modern Fertility. My OB was really surprised to see all the results that I already had in hand walking in the office. She then used results from Modern Fertility, which would not have been covered by my PPO plan, by the way, to help me understand how my hormone levels are changing as I am gracefully maturing. Now, I'm a little ashamed to admit this, but I learned more about my health in that one visit than I ever had before. Because here's the thing, with typical tests done in a lab, you know, they get ordered by your doctor, then you get sent off to do your labs, they get sent to the doctor, and you don't hear anything unless they're abnormal. I would rather bring my results with me and spend my time talking about the results with my physician rather than how and where to get the test. That's why Modern Fertility was created. It's the easy and affordable way to test your fertility hormones at home with a simple finger prick. You just mail it in with a prepaid label. You get personalized results within 10 days. And I will be more than happy to share my results with you if you want to see what Modern Fertility's reports look like. Also, if you have an HSA or an FSA like I do, you can use those dollars on Modern Fertility so you are not having to pay premium if your insurance doesn't cover it, which most don't. I know, it's terrible, but it's true. You're going to get the insight into how many eggs you have, hormone levels, any reproductive red flags, and those results go in depth into what every hormone means. And if you don't see your physician as often as you should, you can call, talk one-on-one with a fertility nurse to help you review your results and go over options for your next steps. Right now, Modern Fertility is offering my listeners $20 off the test when you go to modernfertility.com/realitv. That's R-E-A-L-I-T-V. That means your test will cost $139 instead of the hundreds or thousands it could cost at a doctor's office. Get $20 off your fertility test when you go to modernfertility.com/realitv. modernfertility.com/realitv. We made it to the end of the podcast. You made it to the end of the book. Oh, wow. That's a deep Grover cut for you there. Let's talk about the latest episode of Married at First Sight. This is the part of the season where the show hooks all the couples up with new apartments, and this time they're all on the same complex. I kind of like this. I don't really miss the apartment shopping episodes that we would get in previous seasons. Let's start out with Mindy and Zach. Get your Zach douchebag bingo card ready because we have an I-19, I for idiot who acts 19, I don't know. This tight jogger wearing flat ass loser starts throwing his vocabulary version of loose stool out there and says he's being stoic. Stoic. While he's scrambling eggs, and we're going to talk about these eggs. I mean, where do we start? He pulls these things out of, I don't know, the fucking garbage because number one, they've been gone a while and he's pulling out old eggs. And number two, there were at least 8 old broken eggs in that fucking carton. Who saves the shells? I've never heard of this in my life. That's Salmonella Central right there. In fact, I don't think it's too far-fetched to assume Zach single-handedly is responsible for the coronavirus. He lives in D.C. Maybe we should have the CDC go visit him in D.C., if you know what I'm saying. Now, why did Zach go on this show? That seems to be the big question that we all need to be answered. It is certainly not for his modeling career because he's not super hot. He doesn't have a model body, and it cannot be for his acting or his intelligence because he's dumb as shit and can't even string a single run-on sentence together. Over at Camp Mindy, she's speaking to my heart in the form of a boxed wine. I'm all about bringing the wine bladders back. Nothing at all wrong with a vacuum-sealed wine bladder. It's like Kathy Griffin's beloved mom always says, tip it. But Mindy, my friend, is really hurting here. She has her friend over, the unicorn shirt-wearing friend, who is our Vore, our voice of reason, and the friend nails it. She calls it like it is. She doesn't come across as, you know, shoving birdseed down her gullet or slurring dick her down like Katie's bridesmaid. And then Pastor Cal shows up and pussyfoots around this whole issue without saying too much because Pastor Cal was probably Zach's number one fan. he was probably the one rooting for him to be on the show. He tells Mindy that she's attractive, even if Zach isn't attracted to her, and that he'll take care of it. He'll talk to Zach. Enter Zach with Pastor Cal, and Pastor Cal strikes a quizzical look, both with and without his glasses. And then Zach shoots it straight with, of course, some superfluous words and metaphors and says he indeed is not attracted to Mindy and he doesn't know what to do. So what does Pastor Cal do? He calls Mindy back in so Zach can tell her once again how unattractive she is. Zach keeps saying he knows that she's attractive. He knows that people like her, but he just doesn't. He doesn't want to live with her. He doesn't want to push the relationship. So why, Pastor Cal, would you ask Mindy what she wants before you ask Zach? Because you know Zach would say, I want to quit the fucking show, and then it would be on your ass. So he instead asks Mindy, who is then going to look like the asshole because she's going out there saying, I think it can work. And no matter what Mindy wants, she's going to be heartbroken because Zach, the fucking ass, is telling the world he's not that into her at all. Whew, okay, Jessica and Austin. Now, of course, these two are cute, but I'm just going to call it like it is because that's the mood I'm in. Jessica is definitely more into Austin than Austin is into Jessica, don't you think? I sense a borderline annoyance with her. I'm probably projecting my own insecurities here, but I see a little bit of a wall up around Austin. You know, there's only so much, cuddle me, you like my bad breath, you're so messy, that someone can take. I'm hoping she's more real and normal when the cameras are off. I'm going to cross my fingers there. So they eventually go to one another's apartments, and I think we all knew both of them live like college kids who took their parents' old furniture and decorated with a few practical items from Kohl's. You could tell Jessica is like super into Kohl's, all the Kohl's cash. I can feel it in my bones. Like she knows when the double coupon Kohl's cash days are, buys up all her bed in a bags during the white sale. Lives and dies for the customer appreciation days. But anyhow, Pastor Cal comes over and, I mean, really nothing to note here besides Austin and Jessica teasing each other about baking cookies or something about chess. I don't know. All right, Katie and Derek, lots of puppies and rainbows and handguns and hooker money. Just kidding, you guys. It was a fake gun, you silly goose. I actually think this opens a huge debate, not politically. I just wonder where people lie on this. Derek says he has a fake handgun in the case that a burglar breaks in and he can hold up this fake gun and it would scare the bad guy off. Or I see it going as the guy shoots you first and now you're dead. That's why I have kind of a mousetrap situation set up when Dave travels. I mean, I'm not going to give you all my secrets because one of you might want to break into my house and kill me. But my system that I have set up to save myself and my children is pretty good. I don't think I need it 24/7 though, because I mean, that's why I have Dave sleep closer to the door so that if someone breaks in when he's here, he gets killed first. I think the kids just rely on me a little bit more, if you know what I mean. Anyhow, no surprises at Katie's house, just a cute dog and really cute bras all lined up in her drawer. Isn't that so sweet? Something I know nothing about because big boo girls don't get that luxury. We just get ugly beige and, if you're lucky, a black bra. Watch out. 5 snappers. Now let's talk about Pastor Cal's visit to the happy couple. Derek admits that he doesn't love Katie yet, and he's probably not going to see that happening for another 6 months to a year. So after hearing that sucker punch to the gut, in addition to Derek telling Katie she's more like his roommate, ouch, Pastor Cal decides to make things really painful and awkward for Katie. Katie, are you still attracted to your ex? Do you still have feelings for him? Are you emotionally over it? Oh, I don't think you are. You are really, really still into him, aren't you? Don't cry, Katie. Derek, how do you feel about Katie right now? Well, fuck you, Cal. My God, way to counsel these couples. He sucks. Where the frick's Pepper, man? All right, Taylor and Brandon. Well, Taylor actually arrives to her apartment all alone because Brandon bolted from the airport on his own. He's such an asshole. So you know who we need to save the day, help with this challenge? Pastor Cal. Pastor Cal assures Taylor, little lady, that they did not match her up with this rude, arrogant, evasive, selfish frickin' prick that we've seen the last couple weeks. No, 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 we didn't do that. Really, Pastor Cal? She was literally matched and legally married to him. Pastor Cal is gonna fall on his own fucking sword for Brandon, I'm telling you. Especially after Brandon swaggers in with lame-ass flowers as an attempt to smooth things over, and then he throws in a bunch of his absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. Ugh. So they send Taylor off so they can talk man-to-man. And of course, Cal lets Brandon off the hook because some bullshit reason for being an asshole on the honeymoon. He didn't mean to feel that way. He was cornered or he felt controlled, vulnerable. It's all bullshit. So then Cal does his favorite thing ever. This is not the first time he's done this. It's very Odge and Jer. He slowly talks through their vows and makes them say I do to one another again. And I don't think it worked that great considering Brandon yawned his way through Taylor's arrival at his apartment. And then Brandon makes Taylor help him pack his shit up. I think Taylor offered in a general way, like most people would, like, oh, do you need any help? But, you know, if you didn't feel comfortable sharing a flight home with someone or waking up next to someone, you certainly shouldn't think it's okay to have that person pack your shit up, shove your undies in a suitcase for your lazy fucking ass. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm gonna absolutely shove my foot up his fucking ass. Okay, Mika and Michael. They have a lot of awkward, not funny conversations about cooking, and then awkward, not funny conversations about Mika's extra pillows on the bed, and Mika thinks Michael's snooping through her stuff. He wasn't Mika. Michael was not snooping. I think he was doing what he was supposed to do in the scene, and I think he was trying to make things lighthearted and be flirty. Now, over at Michael's place, his bedroom was real sad, real, real sad, and that spatula on the stove. As much as I don't like Mika, I understood her in that moment. Michael keeps a full setup for sautéing something at all times, just in case he feels like cooking at any moment in the day. I wouldn't be able to sleep, or actually, I wouldn't even be able to move away from the stove, take a step away, if I knew I had a spatula sitting in a pan on my stove. I would be having an anxiety attack about it all day long if I knew a pot and a pan and a spoon were laying out somewhere in my house. I wish I had that give no shits part of my brain activated. Make my life a lot easier and probably wouldn't have to make you guys turn on the volume on your podcast right now because I'm screaming out a fucking spatula. Now, like the other couples, Pastor Cal arrives to counsel Mika and Michael. And after learning that Michael will be making significantly more money due to recently being hired as a principal, Mika seems quite optimistic. Interesting. Find that very interesting that Mika wants her man to make more than her, but she also wants to control everything else about the relationship. I don't know how I feel about that. You know, I just think there's something to be said about Mika's personality. Not that she's greedy or she's money hungry. It's something to think about. I don't know. Well, within moments, we go back to this comment that Mika said, Michael said, I demand sex on the honeymoon. Michael is either so deeply troubled by this or so exhausted from beating the stupid comment to death because he breaks down in tears. I was just going by my empathic feelings in the moment. I like to think I have a good BS meter or a keen feeler for when people are being genuine. And I believe Michael. I think Mika enjoys being the one who feels wronged in a relationship. I believe I mentioned this a couple weeks back. She has a tendency to take on the victim role in order to have an upper hand or a reason to be uptight or a reason to justify her being controlling, if that makes any kind of sense. I just don't get it. Even if Michael did make that comment, he's paid the price for it and he is trying over and over to make Mika at least smile. Well, I hope I made you smile today. Thank you for joining me here on Reality TV. Check the show notes for my links to Patreon and Total Request Podcast. Amanda and I are going to be recapping an episode of The Golden Girls. Coming up on Patreon this week, as I mentioned before, Amanda and I are doing a crossover. We'll be talking about Love After Lockup, Cheer, and McMillions. Thank you for your 5-star reviews. Thank you for your written reviews, retweeting and sharing Reality TV. Oh, I cannot thank you enough. And until next time, take care of yourself and stay salty.